We'll start.
Blog Talk Radio.
And diamond rings, that's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, with a reef whistle blows, weekend warriors toe to toe, football.
So old timers, do you remember the names like Bronco McGurkey and Night Train Lane, Bulldog Turner, my man Sam Huff, in the snow and the mud, they were still real tough. Crazy Leg Church, and remember Raymond Berry asked me if they hit hard, and I'll say Ferry, Paul, Christian, Buddy, Young Lady Moore, is them my door, they seem to always score, Ed Sprinkle, defensive end for those years, Gene Big Daddy, Liston was a man to fear, you have Steve Van Buren, and Otto Graham, Johnny United had the arm of a Superman, we had Charlie Trippi, and Gino Marquette, if you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet, which I could quarterback, like Johnny Lou Jack, or even Sid Luffin, as a matter of fact, do you remember Red Brains, the Gallop and goes. He could do a 95 running coast to coast. You had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Y.A. Tittle, Allie Madison, hey, I remember all those guys from back in the day.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows, weekend warriors toe to toe.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show. I'm live here in the CMT Firestorm Studio in Tampa, Florida. I'm your host, Carson Mathis, where the theme of the show is to give raw, uncut, and unedited analysis on major college and professional football. Let me introduce the panel. Callie Mike, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Let's get a good show today.
All right, Big Tex, what's up?
What's going on? And no, there's no college team that can be an NFL team ever.
All right, shout out, Mike. What's up?
What's going on, everybody? Hello! Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween, everybody. Happy Halloween. It was a very interesting weekend last weekend in college football, and we're about to get into it. The first thing we're going to talk about is Florida versus Georgia. Obviously, Florida lost, which dropped them in the polls. I guess we want to talk about, have a recap of the game. What do you think happened to the Gators? I mean, what made them lose? And with that loss, what's the next step for Georgia? I mean, can they win the SEC? Will they win the SEC? Let me start with you, Callie Mike. What do you think?
Well, I had a in-depth discussion with Tex about this weekend. And like I say, now that Georgia beat Florida, now they're national championship contenders, really? I mean, last week, everybody was counting them. You know, like I say, it goes back to what I said about these cats playing each other and playing teams out of conference. Now, would everybody be satisfied if Georgia went to the national championship now? Really? I mean, come on. You know, what's changed? They beat one team, not in the national championship favorites? Really? I mean, come on. Something's got to give with this whole SEC thing, man.
I mean, nobody's saying they're a national championship favorite. I mean, a lot of people just think they can win the East.
The polls and their schedule are.
Georgia, I mean, the SEC champion, they got to play. If they win out, they got to play against an Alabama or an FSU, probably in Alabama. But, I mean, that's not going to be an easy cakewalk. I don't think they're going to win the SEC.
It's easier, man. I mean, you know, like I said, it's just the way these things go back and forth. It's just, you know, it gets monotonous and it gets ridiculous. You know, like I said, last week they were dogs. Everybody was talking about it. Once they lost to South Carolina, they stunk. Now all of a sudden, like I said, they got Ole Miss, Auburn, Georgia Southern, and Georgia Tech ahead of them. You know, so, I mean, how many of those games are they going to lose?
None. They're not going to lose any of them. But then they have the SEC championship game. That's the key. The SEC
last year, I think the team lose the SEC championship game, win an SEC championship. So, I mean, what's that?
No, they didn't. No, LSU won the SEC championship game.
Well, that's last year, I think the team lose and still go to the SEC championship. So, what that mean? You know?
Well, I mean, it's the Eastern Division versus the Western Division. You can lose. Georgia lost to Boise State last year and made it to the SEC championship game. They won most of the SEC games. I think they lost to, like, South Carolina last year, I believe, in the regular season.
But how tough is, like I say, how tough does that make Georgia, though? Like I said, last week we were talking about them being dogs. Now, all of a sudden, they have a chance to go to the national championship?
Yeah, because they beat the number two team in the nation. They beat the number two team in the nation. That's why.
Well, okay, like I said, so that makes them a national. So that means they should be. Okay, even if Florida wasn't the number two team, what would Georgia's ranking really be now? Would they be out of the top five?
Probably not. No.
No.
Right.
So like I said, is this a deserving? When everybody was making, was this a deserving team of being in the top five? Nobody here had them in their top five.
No, I didn't have them in my top five because I thought they were very vulnerable on the defensive front.
And like I said,
scheme.
What changed about that?
They showed up. They showed up. Their talent
really changed.
Hey, like I want to go to Texas next, but like Tex said, their talent showed up that game. Their talent, their scheme, whatever was going on, they got the athletes, but the scheme wasn't, whatever they were doing wasn't working, but their talent showed that game. I don't know, maybe it was a rivalry game or whatnot, but, I mean, they got five players projected to be first two rounds. So,
nobody
they got five
got
players
out,
on defense.
It was a 9-17 game. Nobody really got blown out. I mean, let's call it what it was. I mean, it wasn't.
Let me go to you, Texas. What you have to say?
I don't think Georgia, and I don't really listen to what all of these, you know, these folks on the shows and the polls are saying about most teams. I just look at the teams and I form my opinion. To me, Georgia, and it might sound ridiculous, but I mean, just from a standpoint of just raw athleticism across the board, I mean, Georgia might have every team in the SEC beat. I'm just saying, based on just raw athleticism, I think the talent showed up for a game. It's a rivalry game. You know, Mark Richt is going to have them ready to play. You know, I know they've lost a lot of games to Florida, but you know, Rick was going to have them ready to play. This is a bit of a trap game to Florida, and while Florida is pretty good, I don't see them as a national championship contender like I would at Alabama or Oregon. I mean, Florida, to me, I mean, I knew they would be good, but what I'm seeing from Florida now, I expected this more in 2013. I thought they had the potential to be this good here in 2012, but I was checking for Florida as a national title contender in 2013, so... You know, they were, you know, the nose is kind of open a little bit. So, you know, you get a little taste of it. What's it like to be the hunted? You come back in 2013 and you just be a chef in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't make Florida a bad team, but they are ahead of schedule. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, they could have been had. They're still a solid team, but, again, this is, and we knew they'd be good, but this is, you know, they're above their heads a little bit. So, I mean, they hit a snag, and who knows what happens if that tight end doesn't fumble that ball, because Driscoll was taking him down the field, and Georgia was coming after him. So, it's just horrible that the game had to end the way it did, because it looked like Driscoll was gonna, like he was gonna be a hero or something. I mean, we don't know, but you know, it's okay. So, I mean, I think Georgia's a good team. I don't see them as a national title contender. I mean, they're a solid team. You get a 12-team playoff, you know, on a neutral field, and then, you know, they get coached up. Maybe Georgia can make a little bit of noise, but we don't know that. So,
all right. Well, let me hear what Shot Town, what you got to say before we get to our caller here?
I agree with Tex on that. I think Florida kind of, you know, the word kind of overachieved in somewhat. And I told you, Clausell, in the beginning about Muschamp that he was going to be the coach for Florida. You didn't think he was going to get it done.
Man, no, he didn't get him over the hump. I still don't. Hold on. I want you to finish, and I got something to say about that. Keep going.
But it was the reason why he was going to be the heir apparent coach at Texas. So they knew what they got in Florida. Florida's heading in the right direction. But I say this about Georgia. Regardless of what happens, Mark Richt will be the head coach of the Dogs. Regardless of what happens, they say they have a stump, but hey, he beat Florida. But Georgia definitely beating Florida for number two. I mean, right now, their chances are very, very favorable, like you said, looking at their schedule of going into the SEC championship. Question is, you know what I'm saying, hey, Bama do their thing. Question is, could they beat Alabama or LSU?
Okay, well, hold on. I want to respond. Well, to answer the last question, absolutely not. The number two, well, maybe it can be LSU, but not Alabama. But the first question you talk about Muschamp, I still don't think he can get them over the hump to a national championship. No. Did you see his? I was busy this weekend, so I was busy at that time, so I didn't see the game. But I saw clips of it. I saw the replay. I mean, you can look at his body language. Things don't go well with that team. Look at his body language. He's like Stan Van Gundy. He panics. He just panics. I don't think that guy is going to be the guy that's going to get them over the hump. He'll get good players. I mean, Florida's probably the best job in America. I mean, you sitting in the middle of Florida. I mean, you pick your players there. Well, you know Alabama's doing that right now, but really, idealistically, you could be – that's the best job in America if you're the best type of coach. But he's not going to get them over the hump. I don't believe he will, you know. But that's just my opinion. Hold on. I want to see what this caller has to say here. 813-443-813.
Yeah, I really think it's the buck stops at Alabama. I don't even know why we're talking about any of the other teams in the SEC or the entire country. Are you guys being serious right now? Does anybody really think somebody's going to come and beat Alabama this year?
Well, we've never talked about any of the other. While I do think the SEC is the best conference in the nation, and they have a lot of quality teams. I haven't heard anybody on this show talk about anybody else besides Bama or LSU. I might be alone with LSU, but nobody's talking about any other national title contenders besides Bama or LSU.
LSU's not no national title contender. What are you talking about? But anyway, keep going.
Here we go.
Wait a minute, Clausell. So if LSU beat Alabama this weekend, they're not national title contender?
Well, yeah, if they beat them this weekend, yeah. But, I mean, based on – hello, are you there? Everybody there? Based on the record resume between beginning of the season to now, LSU is not up for national championship. I don't know what people are thinking that way.
What resume are you talking about?
The style of win, the type of win, the play on the field, the eye test. LSU is not a national championship caliber team.
Who has Alabama played?
I'm looking at the eye test, sir. Look at the eye test. When you see Alabama play, they dominate.
Yeah, they
okay?
beat, they
you,
beat
you can
Western
say what you
Kentucky.
Want to.
They beat Western Kentucky 35-0.
Who has the number one?
They beat Arkansas 52-0.
Cali Mike.
They blew out Florida Atlantic.
Answer the question then, Cali Mike. Who has the number one defense in the country? Who's ranked number one in the country?
I'm looking at it right here. Alabama,
okay. All right. What quarterback hasn't thrown an interception all season? AJ McCarron, he hasn't thrown one interception the whole season, and they have a running game on top of that? Are you trying to tell me that they're not a clear-cut number one team in the nation? They're not a clear-cut dominant team? Are you kidding me? Come on,
I didn't say they were number one team, but I said if LSU beats them, what does that mean?
Yeah, you can put them back in the national, but they won't win because they have a horrible offense.
Somebody's
going to beat them. Oregon would beat LSU this year. This year's Oregon would be LSU's team of this year, not
last year.
We're not
talking about Oregon LSU. We're talking about Alabama LSU.
Alabama's going to win that game this weekend. They're going to win that game. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment. Huh? What'd you say?
Give me LSU this weekend.
I know you're going to go LSU. I don't know why, but it's just whatever. It's just whatever. I don't know what objectivity you have with that mindset. You cannot give me an objective reason why you think LSU's going to win this game. But it's whatever. It's okay. It's whatever. I'm fine with that.
I know. You can't give me one about Bama either.
Are you kidding me? Okay, all right. Let's go down the list here. You want to go down the list here? You want to go down the list?
Bama. This
what list? Yeah, I want to hear what list you have to say.
Bama.
You want to be okay? You want me to give you an objective reason why Alabama's going to beat LSU this weekend?
Claude, okay. We'll get to it later. We'll get to it later.
Okay, we're going to go to the next segment. We're going to go to the next segment. Okay. All right, hold up. I'm going to put you on hold, Matt. I got to put you on hold. We're going to go to the next segment here. Hold
on. This list is going to be made up, too, by the way, but keep going.
Now, okay, we're going to get to, okay, that was the next segment here, but we're going to jump here, and then we're going to get back to LSU Alabama. We're going to go to USC Oregon here. USC lost last week. It's pretty safe to say they're out the national championship game. But, you know, Oregon's coming into town this week. A lot of people have questions about their schedule. You know, they've been blowing teams out, you know, pretty dominant team. I put them at 1A with Alabama. But this is going to be their biggest test this year. And, you know, USC's going to be pumped up for this game. Are they going to be pumped up for this game? So what do you think is going to happen this weekend? Can they beat USC? Can USC beat them? Let's go with you, Callie Mike. What do you think?
Oregon, like I say, Oregon got a tough offense. But they do – I'll say this. They're not a steady offense, though. They're a breakaway kind of team. When Kenyon Barner gets going, they can be steady. But if he's not going – Mariota really, he can't really drive the offense as steadily as I would like. They're kind of a spurt kind of team. Like, you know, they'll use their speed and they'll blast past the team and score, like I say, 15, 21 points. And then they might, you know, they might stall for a little while. Then they might score another 21 points real quick. And then they might stall for a while. I think against another team that's as fast as them, like I say, USC's defense, and that's the other thing. Oregon doesn't pass the ball downfield, so it's going to really negate how exposed USC's cornerbacks and secondary has been this year. It's going to come all up to the front with the running, you know, and the short passes. Now, if Barner gets going, like I say, they're a hard offensive stop. That's a good. He's a good running back, and the offense really, you know, it really goes to me. Like I've been telling people all year, even though DeAnthony Thomas is a threat, this offense goes as far as Kenyon Barner is going to carry him. And if he gets going, it's going to be Oregon. But, you know, like I said, if the game comes down to Mariota passing the ball and USC gets their offense going, I think you'll see a USC win. Plus, this game is going to be at USC. USC right now, like you said, they're out of the national championship picture. So, basically, all they can do right now is play spoiler for a lot of teams. They got Oregon they can spoil, and they got Notre Dame they can spoil. Both big rivalry games, both at home. So, you know, SC is going to be trying to, you know, and like I said, we still got, you know, a Rose Bowl to play for. So SEC is going to be trying to get in the Rose Bowl game and knock these teams off. And, you know, they're going to have a chip on their shoulder.
Okay. Okay, what you got to say, Shottown?
Well, I think it's going to be a good game, but I mean, this one I'm going to go with Oregon. Even though they're on the road, Oregon, no, I mean, their hopes of being a national title team and possibly be number one or number two in the VCS. It's crunch time now. We're entering November now, so they know it's big. I mean, right now I'm going with the high end. They still undefeated, so yeah, but it's going to be a close game, though. But I think Oregon's going to beat USC.
All right, Tex.
I think I have USC. I think USC. Not only are they explosive, but they can methodically drive down the field. I think they can keep Oregon's offense off the field. I think they can make Mariota pass. You make Oregon pass, you disrupt tempo. And tempo is everything with Chip Kelly's offense. You disrupt that. I think you got them. I think USC has the front seven to do it. I think they have the offense, the running game, the quarterback, the wide receivers, the scheme to keep them guys off the field, shoot the clock, and kind of dirty it up, ugly it up a little bit. And it's a home game.
I just think now, at this point, with two losses, to me, USC is a dangerous team in the Coliseum for somebody like Oregon or Notre Dame looking to get where they want to go. So I think I have to go with USC in the Coliseum.
Well, excuse me. I got Oregon in this game. Only because I think USC, they're down for their loss. I think USC does have speed, but just think that firepower. When you got Oregon and their quarterback playing the way they play, he plays very efficient with the ball, very accurate with the ball. I think, and their defense is pretty good too. And I think that they can contain, you know, get Marquise Lee and Robert Woods at least less than 100 yards each on the receiving end. Because, you know, their running game, USC's running game ain't really been up, pumping up that well on certain games. So I think that I got Oregon in this game. I got them winning by 10 points. And I think this will – I got them winning by at least 10 points.
How much money would you put on that?
I put, like, maybe $50 on it or something. I'm not putting a lot of it, though. But I get, like, $50. I mean, I just think that Oregon –
Like I said, Clavel – Mariota, when he's throwing short passes to the guys that are going to break yards, he looks good. But this is a quarterback that's only passed over 200 yards three times this season.
Right. That's true. But
that's 200 yards now, only three times this season. You know, he has a very high passing percentage, very high completion percentage. But like I said, most of them passes are short dinks and dunks, and you know,
right.
You got at some point, like I said, especially if they're going to go up against the SEC team, that's what I mentioned. At some point, you got to let the ball fly. You know, I don't know if this guy can do it.
Well, it's probably not going to be this game either. He's not going to do that. He's
coming into the Coliseum. It's going to be a tough game, man. It's a fresh game.
Yeah, it's going to be a first. Yeah, it's true. But for some reason, the momentum that they have right now, I just think is good enough to beat them by 10 points. I really do. But hold on, I want to hear what the I want to hear what the caller has to say here. 813. Are you there? Matt, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I take Oregon, but I think it's going to be a heavy scoring game. I think the receivers for USC are just phenomenal. Barkley has so many great weapons to throw to. You know, I think he's going to cut up the Oregon secondary, but at the same time, Chip Kelly likes to keep it on the ground, pound it out, short screens, and using screens as the running game. I would say Oregon by 3 points, high scoring game.
Well, I mean, like high scoring game, like 30 plus points, 40 plus points?
38-35.
Okay.
You think it might go in overtime?
I could
see this going into overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think Matt Bartley's going to come up for this game. He's a big time. I'll give him that. He's big time. He shows up in the big games. So,
and,
you know.
And you just seen the receivers last week. I forget the cat's name off the top of my head, but
Marquise Lee.
19. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Come on, USC?
Yeah.
You know, Marquise Lee, number 9. Robert Woods, number 2.
Yeah. Maybe number nine.
The one that broke off the run and turned on the Jets and made the secondary last week look stupid.
Yeah, that was Marquise Lee.
Sounds like Marquise Lee, yeah.
Yeah, almost 400 yards receiving last week.
That guy's going to be playing on Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, and the USC, their running game isn't great, but they have good running backs. They just aren't utilizing them. They use the run to set up the pass. They don't need 20, 10, 8-yard runs because you got to understand, you need 10 yards, right, to get a first down. If you get 4, you're great. Now you're 2nd and 6. A slant pass, first down. I mean, you can slowly break it down. They use the slants and the short runs to lure the linebackers in so they can pop, you know, routes over the middle and on the outside. So this way, he wants to lure in one-on-one coverage. If you're running and throwing slants and screen passes, you're bringing the linebackers in. Now you're forcing the secondary to go one-on-one. And when you get one-on-one matchups with athletes like that at receiver and Matt Barkley, he's going to go deep, and they're going to score on big plays like that.
That's a good point to call it, Mitch. One thing that bothers me about the USC offense, and Carzell hit on it at the beginning of the preseason, I didn't want to see it happen, but the depth chart with the sanctions is starting to come into play. Last week they had a crucial fumble that really changed the game by a third-string running back who in regular other situations if they would have had their full depth chart never would have been carrying the ball, especially at that point in the game. And it kind of turned the tide in Arizona's favor. So I think that depth chart is something we're going to have to worry about. USC, you know, their leading rusher last year and their number two running back this year is injured. I don't know if he's going to play this game, but, he was out last game. Like I said, he had a third string. Well, actually, really, he was a fourth string running back running the ball and had a very crucial fumble. And I think he even got injured on that play, too. So, you know, like I said, that's eventually, if the injuries keep up, that's going to come into play. And, you know, especially with the way teams are stacking up now, you know, you got teams three, you know, especially the top-tier teams, are 3 and 4 deep with, you know, high school All-Americans. So it's going to be really tough for them, you know, to try to, you know, and I like I said, I think that has a lot to do with a lot of the problems this year. It's really tough to try to field an adequate team when you can only go two deep, you know, and you got to end up having freshmen and unproven players on the field in crunch-time situations.
All right. We want to.
Yeah, because that game is going to be kind of like a championship atmosphere type of game.
Oh, it's going to be rocking.
All right, well, hold on. Let me put you on. Oh, yeah, I want to say this. This is the caller, Matthew Mong. He has a talk show every Tuesday from 8:30 to 10:30, The Cold Hard Truth on Sports by the Mathis Raymond Foundation. So, you know, you want to listen to that. Some of us, we're probably going to be on the show sometimes. Some of the panels, so you want to listen to it, be sure to do so. The Cold Hard Truth on Sports. Thank you. All right, put you on hold real quick, Matt, and we're going to go to the next topic. We're going to get to LSU Alabama now. Now, okay, I want everybody here on the panel, and then I'm going to put Matt online too. I want everybody on the panel to tell me who's going to win this game, and tell me why. That's what I want to know. Right, that's the key thing is why. And I'm going to start with Chi-Town first.
Between Alabama and LSU, correct?
Yes, Alabama and LSU.
Well, in the beginning, if you had asked me this maybe about a few months ago, I was like, it could go either way, this and that. But since now it's November, looking how it's coming down to play, and I said it's about the quarterback. You know, that's the thing why I wasn't too sold on LSU.
Chi-Town, you there? Don't tell me you're breaking up. I think he's breaking up here. Yeah, he broke up. So let me go to Cali Mike first. I'm gonna get to you, Tex, in a second. I want to hear what you got to say. All right, we'll go Cali Mike.
I'm going to pick LSU to win this game.
And why?
Because you're a fan of Alabama, and I want them to lose.
any objective football reason?
Well, like I say, in reality, I would favor Alabama. Like I say, they've done nothing wrong this year. You know, they've been a solid team, you know, a solid number one team. They got everything you would look for in a number one team. But, you know, this is gonna be a fight, man. You know, LSU, it's gonna be at home. That stadium's gonna be crazy. You're not gonna be able to hear. You know, they're gonna be head hunting, man. And it's gonna be tough. Like I said, you know, always got to, you know, look out for the home team in situations like this. Like I say, they're going to be hungry from last year's loss. And, you know, like I say, and you know, these teams, you know, even though, like I say, you know, Medeberg hasn't playing that good at quarterback, so they're very evenly matched teams. You know, if LSU's offense can, I mean, defense can play, you know, up to their full potential, even though I think they got a couple of injuries. I think Quan Alexander is still out. I don't know if he might be out for the season. But, you know, like I said, they post a very tough team. I would like them to have another kind of game breaker on offense. But, you know, if they can just, you know, if they can put up, you know, at least two touchdowns and keep this a low scoring affair, I think LSU has a chance to take it. You know, so I gotta roll with the home team on this one.
All right. Let me go. We're going to get to you in a second, Tex. Hold up. Let me go to Chi-Town. Chi-Town. I guess he broke up again. So we're going to have to go to you, Tex.
Just give me the home team, man. I think I understand you're an Alabama fan, but besides the you know, they're not undefeated, but besides what happened in Florida, I mean, I don't understand why you think Bama will. This is Bama's first test. You understand what I'm saying? This is Bama's first test.
Is that right?
I think it's a great team. I don't think they're going to. I can't see them going to Baton Rouge and winning. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
With the defensive ends, with the defensive line, with the cornerbacks, with the safety play, Eric Reed is playing very good football right now. So you have McCarron and Reed is the matchup to watch. But I can't see Alabama. I don't think Alabama is so good. Now, if they were in Tuscaloosa, I would go with Alabama. But I don't think they're that good to where they go to Baton Rouge and they win. I think last year's Alabama team can go to Baton Rouge and win. You understand what I'm saying? But I don't feel like this team can. I don't feel like they've been tested. I think LSU is a bit battle tested. Lost to Florida, went to Texas A&M, pulled it out. Who also pushed Florida on their own home field, and they beat South Carolina, although it was a home game. I think LSU is, you know, they've been playing hungry these past few weeks. They control their own destiny.
Okay.
I don't see how Alabama goes into Baton Rouge and wins. I don't see it. I think it's tough on the road to win anyway, but you know, now you coming into LSU, you're trying to set your mark, you're trying to set yourself up for great things, and this is the perfect week for LSU to play spoiler. Big trap game for Alabama.
Okay. Big trap game. You think? Okay, whatever. I'm gonna address that in a second.
Because Bama 2001 Miami, right? Yeah, trap game.
Okay, hold on. Let's. I'm gonna get to you in a second about that. Hold on. Let me go to Mike. Let me go to Chi-Town first. Chi-Town, you online?
Yeah, I'm back again. You get my part. Right. I said everything. It kind of favors Alabama. Looking at the quarterback play, I was saying he's, you know, national champion. He was the starting quarterback last year, so. To me, this type of game is like a championship type of game, you know. And Alabama lost to LSU last year, a regular season game at Alabama. So now this year they're going to LSU, and it's going to be a night game. And they got that in mind, like, man, you know, let's keep it going. You know, this is all the stakes on the mind and chips on the mind, possibly getting into an SEC championship. And then first month of November, you know, first game, I should say. So everything favors Alabama, and I think Alabama – like I was saying, it won't surprise me if Alabama beats LSU double digits and cause havoc on LSU's quarterback because their defense, you know, is so good. They can cause
trouble. Thank you. Now, first of all, me being an Alabama fan has nothing to do with this, and I know you don't believe me, but I don't care. It has nothing to do with this. Let's just look at the facts here, okay? Let's analyze defense, okay? Defensive line, I'll give you that. LSU probably got a better defensive line in terms of NFL talent on the defensive line. But in terms of total defense, Alabama has a better defense, okay? Now, when you rush the passer, what you got to think about it.
Hold on,
let
me stop you right now because you just said facts.
Stop me there, okay. What you say?
You just said I'm going to name some facts and you didn't name any facts. You only named your opinion.
What was the opinion? What was the fact? What are you talking about?
You said LSU has a better defensive line, but Alabama has a better overall defense.
They do. Look at the statistics. They do. Look at the statistics. Look it up. You just saw it online.
It's a 5 point per game difference, bro.
0.5%? Or
5 points? 5 points.
So, I mean, it's still better. Who says they don't want to run defense? Alabama. Who? I mean, look at the scores. Look at Alabama scores and look at LSU scores. And you can tell who does a better defense. So, okay, my point is, Alabama, I think, based on fact, Alabama has a better defense, okay? Now, but we can even give you that. That kind of neutralizes itself because I will agree, this will be a dog fight. I'm not saying Alabama's going to go in there and blow them out. Obviously, that's obviously not going to happen. I know that. And this is the toughest place to play in the country, in my opinion. But based on the quarterback play of LSU, okay, the difference with last year's LSU and this year's LSU is the quarterback play. The quarterback play is horrible, okay? This guy completing only 50% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I mean, this guy is pathetic at quarterback. No disrespect. I mean, maybe you're listening, you're probably better than me, but you're pathetic at quarterback right now on relative to your level of play. Now, Alabama's quarterback, he has thrown 18 touchdowns with no interceptions, okay? 18 touchdowns, no interceptions, okay? Now, look at LSU's running game. Techs always talk about LSU's running game is better than Alabama's game. It's not. It's not. It is not better than Alabama's running game. I take Alabama's 2 studs over LSU's 4, okay? T.J. Yeldon, he was a freshman, who's the best running back out of everybody on the field. He's better than all of LSU's running backs. Trust me on that. He's averaging 7 yards a carry right now. He's just a true freshman. Okay, remember when I said Reggie Bush Jr.? Cal A. Mike, remember I said that?
No.
I said he was Reggie Bush Jr. He's probably not.
I don't want to believe it anyway.
He probably is not Reggie Bush Jr. I'll give you that. But he's in that same elk, though. He's not like – he's bigger than Reggie Bush. He's probably not as fast as Reggie Bush, but he's a game breaker.
He's only rushed for over 100 yards 3 times this season, too. But keep going.
Because he does, too. But he averages 7 yards a carry. He averages 7 yards a carry, Mike. Are you kidding? He averages 7 yards a carry. You're trying to tell me he's not going to be a good player? Okay, whatever. All right. You can believe what you want.
I'm looking at he averaged 4.2 yards a carry against Western Kentucky.
Look at his season statistics. He's averaging 7.
He averaged 3.8 yards a carry against Ole Miss.
Look at his yearly average.
Okay,
I got a question for you. Is he averaging 7 yards a carry for the season? T.J. Yeldon, is he averaging 7 yards a carry for the season?
No,
but let's not even go there. Okay.
My computer's not showing that right now. It's only showing the stats.
Go to Yahoo. All right, now. Now, hold on. I want to go to the next point. The receiving core, okay? Alabama has a better receiving core than LSU, okay? And don't forget about Amari Cooper. Okay, Marquise Lee Jr. He's Marquise Lee Jr. He's not as good as Marquise Lee, but he has the potential. He has the potential to be as good as Marquise Lee.
Is any of this based on anything?
Look at his statistics, man. This guy's averaging 14.8 average per catch. 14.8 average per catch. He catches the ball and he's gone. This guy can play. And he's going to play. He's big time. He's going to play in this game, too. Now, I'll say this. The score is going to probably be 21-10 Alabama. I don't think LSU can generate any points. You know, it'll be close for a half. It'll be close for, like, the first half. And then the second half, Alabama's just gonna put too much on them. You know, that's what's going to happen.
Top wide receivers are averaging more than 14 yards to catch, too. One of them's averaging 16, the other one's averaging 15.
But and how many receptions? Hold up. How many receptions?
26 for the top one, which is six less than him. So keep going.
Whatever, Matt. That's true, but whatever, Matt. Whatever. All right. The bottom line is, Alabama won this game, in my opinion. Like I said, it's going to be a dog fight. I'm not going to lie to you. We know it's going to be a dog fight. And, you know, LSU Miles.
LSU has 4 running backs that are averaging over 6 yards a carry.
I know.
Hill and Blue are averaging 6.7. Mike Ford is averaging 6, and Kenny Hilliard is averaging 5.9. Come on, man.
It is what it is, though.
Whatever. Hey, Alabama's winning this
game. Whatever.
Alabama's winning. If you want to make the case, Alabama's got 3 players averaging 7 yards a carry. And we're looking at the same statistics. If you want to put it that way, Alabama has 3 running backs that are running over 7 yards a carry.
Well,
If you want to, look at that statistic,
does one of those running backs not have over 100 yards rushing? Only 11 carries.
All right, we're gonna go to
29 carries.
Hey, Callie, right, we're gonna go to the caller here. All right. Hey, Matt, man, you on, man?
All right. My prediction is Alabama goes into Louisiana to Death Valley. They pull up their shirts. They show they have the bigger tits, and they win. They get more beats. Okay, Alabama wins the game hands down. I don't think they score. LSU scores a touchdown. I'll give them 4 field goals. They get 12 points. I think Alabama 21-12 is the final. And Alabama is a better all-around team. You're talking so much about the LSU running game. I mean, who did they play all year?
Oh, they played South Carolina. They beat SC. They went to Texas A&M. They pulled it out. And Texas A&M looks tough. Look like they ready for SEC ball, by the way. Florida went into TAMU and got pushed. LSU got pushed.
Way harder schedule than Alabama. I don't want to bring that up. They played Washington, Auburn, they played Florida, they played South Carolina, and they played Texas A&M.
Auburn, we're bringing up Auburn?
Western Kentucky for Alabama, Arkansas, Florida.
I'll take FIU over Auburn.
Ole Miss, oh my goodness, Missouri, whoa, Tennessee, wow. And they beat Mississippi State last week. These guys, wow, you're right.
Mississippi State was undefeated, and they were the number 11 team in the country. What are you talking about?
How many?
Mississippi State was a pretty good team. What are you talking about? And they blew them out. What are you talking about? That was an impressive win. Hold on. If you're gonna give LSU, Texas A&M, you gotta give Alabama, Mississippi State. You can't go. No, that's Texas A&M is better.
That's not even fair. Mississippi State is a better team than Texas A&M.
Yes, they would beat Texas A&M. I think they already did beat them.
Oh my goodness, man!
Didn't they already beat them?
You said Texas A&M
is better than Mississippi State.
You just made up a whole statistic.
They have a better quarterback.
Yeah, Texas A&M may have a better quarterback. Do you think Texas A&M would beat Mississippi State?
Yes.
I don't think they would beat Mississippi State. If you're gonna give LSU, Texas A&M, you gotta give Alabama, Mississippi State.
The point is LSU has been pushed more this year than Alabama has been pushed. I mean, you want us to give you Mississippi State, but we just ripped off about three tough games for LSU. Okay, they went into Florida. They got beat. You understand what I'm saying? They got beat by a top 5 team. I mean, you know, I don't penalize teams for going on the road and losing. You know, I don't penalize teams for that. You understand what I'm saying? Especially
I understand you. I agree with you. I understand.
And they go and they beat SC, albeit it's a home game. They go to Texas A&M and they win. Texas A&M pressed Florida too. I mean, and you want us to give you Mississippi? How many SEC teams right now do you think Mississippi State could beat, the notables? You think they can beat Georgia and Florida, LSU, Bama? You think they can beat any one of them teams?
Believe it or not, I don't know if they could beat maybe Florida or Georgia, but I think they could beat Texas A&M.
Like I said last week, Mississippi State might not win another game this year. They might lose 5 straight. They got Texas A&M this week. They got LSU next week. Is still more talented than them. And Ole Miss at the end of the year, they might lose all the rest of the game this year.
I disagree. They're a good team. Mississippi State's a pretty good team. They've always had a decent team. Huh?
Like I say, Mississippi State ain't been good since they had Fred Smoot in the secondary. And that was what, 2002, 2001?
Hey, my point is this, man. If you're gonna, whatever. the point I'm making is, if you're gonna give these teams Texas A&M, you gotta give Alabama, Mississippi State, and they blew them out. They blew out.
Okay,
Mississippi State out. They blew them out. You can't do that. That's fair. That's not fair. That's not being objective. But whatever. We all have our opinions, man.
Florida
and we don't find out. We got a caller coming in here. I gotta put you on hold here, Matt, real quick. Hold on.
Here's Tony.
No, that's not Tony. James. What's up? CFT Five Storm.
All right. First off, about this Mississippi State team, man. I mean, I pretty much got on you about that game against Alabama, because when you look at Mississippi State, all they pretty much beat out the bottom feeders of the SEC right now. I mean, Kentucky and Tennessee and Auburn, come on, man. So we're pretty much going to see what Mississippi State is all about in the next few weeks. Now, reference to this LSU-Alabama game, I think it's going to be a close game. Hopefully it'll be better than last year. I'm going to have LSU pulling it out, even though, you know, you don't trust the quarterback Carsell.
No, I don't.
I think the defense is going to step up for them. I think their running game is going to step for them. And I think A.J. McCarron is going to have his first interception. If he hasn't had one already, he's going to have one in this game. 17-14 LSU.
Now, when you say that the running game is going to step up for them, like, nobody's been able to run on Alabama all year. I don't understand how the running game is going to step up for them. Well, I mean, what are they going to do, just keep trying to run the ball for nothing?
Well, it'll be multidimensional looks. I mean, you have less miles, so it's not like they're just going to run the ball, you know, like a belly play or behind the guards and stuff like that. They're going to mix it up on the Alabama defense. They're going to have the Alabama defense guessing on them, which I haven't really seen any team really do that against the Alabama defense all year. I think Les Miles has a capability of doing that. His job is he doesn't want the quarterback to pretty much make that many plays. That's pretty much like that Florida-Georgia game last week. Florida had to rely on, you know, their quarterback to make plays, and he pretty much couldn't. So here, he's going to limit the plays from Mettenberger, and then that will pretty much keep him in the game and then pretty much have him ahead at the end of the game, 17-14.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think this is going to be another classic game. No, it's not going to be another classic game. I just think this is not – I don't think these teams are evenly matched this year. I think Alabama is significantly better than LSU. I think that national championship game is kind of like when Oakland Raiders played Tampa Bay. Well, maybe not that. Or I don't know. I can't really give an analogy right now. I just think that Alabama killed LSU psychologically, and I think that LSU's not going to come up with this
game. Carry over this season. Trust me, LSU marked this game down the minute after they played that national championship game. LSU marked this game this year.
This
is pretty much their season. I mean, I don't know if they could care anything else about what they do after this game, but this game, they're going out for blood.
That's true. I will agree. They are going for blood. They will be going for blood. It's just, I just don't think the quarterback play, I think it's worse than it was last year. And everybody was raving on this guy here, and he's worse than what they had last year. And last year, Zach Lee, he was good, you know, until he played Alabama, and then Jordan Jefferson had to do the option to win the game. But I just think that based on the quarterback play, because they won't be able to run the ball. LSU will not be able to run the ball unless it's like some sort of, like, field position luck type of thing, special teams type of situation.
Oh,
that's
man.
The only way I see them having a chance to win this game. That's the only way.
We'll
I don't see them.
Right,
I don't see LSU being on. I don't see. My thing is, I don't see. I don't see LSU being on their 20-yard line and driving all the way down the field and scoring against Alabama. I just can't see that happening. Based on the offensive play, they were barely moving against Towson University. What makes you think they're going to be able to move against Alabama? But anyway, well, what'd you guys say? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You have something to say, James?
Oh, well, no, not really. I mean, I thought someone else had something to say since you said that LSU is going to hardly, you know, drive the ball down the field. I mean, we're not quite looking for no 80-yard drives in this game. That's not what we're looking for. We're just looking for sustained drives in this game. So we're going to see, like, with some of these defenses being showcased here, who's going to have the most success on the field.
All right, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let me put you on hold here. Yeah, anybody else got anything to say? Text, Cali
nah.
Mike, Shottown Mike. Well, hey, we're looking forward to this game. We are looking forward to this. This is. I circled this game too because I don't like LSU as a fan of Alabama, but you know that's the team I really don't like. But you know, I'm more at comfort with this game than I was last year. But we'll see what happens. All right, we're gonna move to the next topic. I'm gonna put you on hold here, James. There was an article today about in the SEC online. Steve Spurrier came out and said that this year's Alabama team could maybe beat a pro team. And, you know, us in the panel had a conversation about that right before the show. And obviously everybody was like, heck no, that's not going to happen. But I guess the question is, and I want to hear everybody here has to say, including the callers, if there's a team out there in history that could beat a college football team out there in history that could beat a pro team, like the worst team in the league, any year, like, you know, any of the worst pro teams in the league like that, New England Patriots back in the day used to be pretty bad. They had a 1-15 season. Detroit Lions had an 0-16 season. Is there any college team that could potentially beat the worst team in the league? Let me start with you, Tex. What you think?
No, man. No.
Never in history. Of all those teams that the Miami Hurricanes had, 2001 Miami Hurricanes,
closest,
USC.
Closest. No, come on. No. It's a college team. It's a professional team. Tempo, completely different. You take a college team that where nobody has even been to a combine, where they haven't done anything to have to do with preparation that NFL players go to. No, it's impossible, man.
Okay.
Wait, let me ask you this question, Carville.
Okay, ask a question.
High school team, could a top high school team beat a college team?
No, it's different, man.
Would you even imagine putting a high school team on the field with a college team?
No. Well, hold on. It depends what division. What are you talking about, like Division II,
Division
III?
Division number one. Division one.
Of course
football.
Not Division I, but if you want to talk about Division II or Division III, maybe.
There's only one division in the NFL, so that we only talk about one division in college football. Would you ever even think about putting a high school football team?
Not against
on
a Division I-A team, no. No, but a Division II or Division III, yes. I think a high school team could potentially be
even
a Division II or Division III college team, yes.
Even then, they might still lose. So you're going to put
a Division III team? I think they would. I think they would win against a Division III team. Yes, I do. I think the best high school team in the country could beat a Division III college football team. I do.
First of all,
yes.
You're talking about putting a college team on the team on the NFL on the same field as a professional team. People who do this for a living.
Oh, that's different. I thought you said no. I thought you were talking about high school and college.
Yeah, I'm saying I wouldn't do that. If I wouldn't do that for high school players to college players, where you might on the top high school team, you might get three or four players that are going to go to college, and those aren't going to be the top colleges. So, like I said, no high school team is going to be really reasonably any good college team. I think on any level is going to beat a high school team. But anyway, no, if I wouldn't do that, I definitely wouldn't put some college kids on the field with an NFL team.
Okay.
And you are on the top high school team, you might have five guys. Let's say you got 10 guys who go to college. And they're not all going to go to D1 schools. They're going to want to go to D3 schools. So how many of those players do you think are you're dealing with people who have better facilities, they have more time to practice. I mean, it wouldn't even be close, man. That's like I said, a silly question. because it will be different. Like I said, it will be different if there were like something like basketball, to where, you know, athleticism could take over. But in football, there's so much more. You know, there's so much more involved.
De La Salle in California couldn't be Mount Union Division III National Championship. De La Salle, they couldn't beat them. All right. Shout out. What you got to say?
I say this. It only happened once a long time ago, back in the mid-60s, when the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl and they played a college all-star team that beat them. And it did happen. I think y'all probably heard of it. A college all-star team beat the Green Bay Super Bowl Green Bay Packer championship team.
I never heard of that before. Show me the stuff on that. Please show us the information, Mike. I showed it to y'all, but it did happen.
They said they played
a Green Bay Packers team? We're not talking about a leather helmet football team, are we?
I'm talking about a Lombardi team. I think the Packers are either the 66 Packers or the 67 Packers, but they played a college. You know what I'm saying?
I don't want to curse on here.
No curse, please.
No.
I heard of that story. It did happen, though, Mike. But they say back in the day, the college all-stars would play against the NFL team, like a champion team.
All right,
I answered that part of the question, though, Mike. I mean, DeClazel. I don't think a college team was, you know what I'm saying, standing a chance against the worst, you know, NFL team in the league. Like Mike said, you know, those are professionals, man, grown men.
Before we get to our callers here, hold on. Tex, you got anything to say real quick?
Nah, man, let's go.
All right, let me go to the caller here. 813-443. 813, Matt.
Yo.
What's up?
Yes. You heard the 95 Nebraska team.
They could be who? Who could
whoever
they
be? Whoever it was at the time. 95, whoever was the worst team.
No, man, they could not. I think it was the San Francisco 49ers that won the Super Bowl that year with Deion Sanders, and they couldn't beat them.
They won it with Deion Sanders. I'm not saying they're going to beat the 49ers or the Chargers that they played, which was the last time the Chargers went to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, the worst team in the NFL that year, I would say Nebraska would have beat them.
I don't know about that, man. I can't see that, man. I can't see Nebraska. I mean,
that Nebraska.
They were good. They were a good team, but I don't think they could be the worst team.
History of college football. Second to the 91 or the 2001 Miami team.
You think that 95 Nebraska team was the best team, second to the 2001 Miami Hurricane team? What are you talking about, with Tommy Frazier and Lawrence Phillips? Yeah. I don't know. In terms of running the ball, I'll give you that.
It's kind of getting beside the point, but I think that, I mean, in terms of NFL talent, you can't get past the 2001 Miami team, but that 95 Nebraska team was the most dominant team I've ever seen. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, they were pretty good. You're saying they're the second greatest team in our era? The
95. No, I'm saying they were
by far
the best. 2001 Miami. It wasn't, like I said, it's not even close.
You talking about the 95 Nebraska team? You think they were better than the Miami team of 2001?
I mean, I don't know who was better. I'm saying that they were by far the most dominant team that I've ever seen. It's not even close.
Oh, you're talking about.
I
don't know if they were better if you line them up on the field. Like I said, Miami. With, 11 first-round picks on the field, it's tough to beat them. But I'm saying that Nebraska team was the most dominant team I've ever seen. It's not even close.
Okay,
I can give you that because they blew out Florida. They blew them out. They blew Florida out.
I know this off the subject, but I found the article. I'll read it to you.
All right, send it to our website, yo.
Okay.
Could you send it to the website?
Okay, I'll say the 1963 College All-Stars with Lombardi, Green Bay Packers, 20-17.
All right. Let me go to the next caller here. Hey, I'm going to put you on hold here, Matt. Let me go to the next caller. 850, James?
Man, no college team in any era would beat an NFL team in any era around this time. I mean, come on. It shouldn't even be close. You got to think about it this way. Like you mentioned it before, yeah, college people have a few NFL-caliber players, but the NFL has a bunch of NFL-caliber players. So you're going to see a weakness in the offensive line, the running backs, receivers, and stuff like that. You ain't going to have a bunch of 18-year-olds going against 35-year-olds that pretty much have the same speed or even faster. That ain't going to happen. They're going to get lit up, no matter who's lining up against them.
But I was going to say, James, it happened one time back in 1963, the Green Bay Packers lost to college football all-stars 20-17.
We're talking about 1963 and that one season.
Yeah,
so who knows what in the world they were doing in 1963. I bet you it was probably the similar type of game in 1963, whether it was college or NFL. It ain't like the passing game pretty much developed until, what, the 70s or 80s? So it's not like you could have that type of matchup in this day's game and have the same result. Even if they had college all-stars right now going against any NFL team, it still couldn't happen.
Mm. All right. Well, it's interesting to talk about, you know. Just the thought came to mind when Steve Spurrier made that comment. I mean, I think y'all probably right.
Only reason we're talking about this is because he said Alabama. You're Alabama fanatic. Let's keep it real.
No, I'm an objective analysis on the show. We're gonna change the subject here now. Hold on, I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to get to some NFL now. We won't even take a break. And the first thing I'm going to talk about here is – was kind of buzzing right now in the media as far as Michael Vick. He's not really playing that well. You know, they just got out of a game where, you know, they didn't look that good against Atlanta. And actually Andy Reid just came out with a statement today, I believe, and said that he's not going to bench Michael Vick. So my question is, do you think they should bench him? You know, because Michael Vick said he would understand if they did. So what's your opinion on that? I'm going to start with you, Shottown.
Excuse my language. Hell no. It's more than the Eagles than Michael Vick. I mean, Michael Vick, I mean, he's a franchise-level quarterback. You know, people don't forget in 2001 he came in Lambeau Field and beat the Green Bay Packers, pretty much single-handedly gave them the Packers their first ever loss in a playoff game, and they rich story history. I mean, people don't forget he got, you know, to the NFC Championship before. So, I mean, Philadelphia is more than just, I mean, the problem is not Michael Vick. They don't have an offensive line that can protect the man, and we all know Michael Vick is a mobile quarterback. You know, he needs protection. He's getting hit all the time. And in that game, too, I heard the defense wasn't playing as pretty good as well either. I mean, Namade got burnt by, I think, either Julio Jones or Roddy White when they cut the lead. You know, I think they was within seven, and he got burnt for a touchdown. So it's more than just that. And then if they decided to bench Michael Vick, they pretty much saying throw in the season because, you know, that's going to pretty much divide the team. You know, they already, of course, fired, you know, their defensive coordinator, which, you know, Castillo, which to me, man, why the heck are you going to be a defensive coordinator? And he's an offensive line coach, you know. So right now, I mean, I thought Philadelphia was definitely going to get this, you know, thing together and beat Atlanta. I thought they were going to beat them. But right now, I don't know. They need to get something going. But benching Michael Vick, that's not the answer. He's not the problem.
All right. Tex, what you got to say about that?
Michael Vick passing his completion percentage outside of the pocket, 28%, worse than the NFL.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
So, how your quarterback goes. I don't want to hear anything about an offensive line outside of Houston and outside of Denver. You're having O-line problems. You understand what I'm saying? O-line play is. I mean, it's like an epidemic this year with how bad it is. Yeah, make excuses and say
this is the O-line. This is Michael Vick still doing his 12-year veteran, doing the same things that he was doing with the Falcons. You know what I'm saying? He's looking, he comes out of, when he takes his drop, looking to one side of the field, not seeing the field, not making his reads. It's not entirely his fault, but, I mean, it's, you know, we're not jumping on RG3 or Luck or anybody else that don't have O-lines either that are having whatever problems, but they're going out and they're performing. Eagles easily have the most talented skill position players in the league, and you can't get it done. Yeah, your quarterback's shoulders are low. Understand what I'm saying? Don't want to hear no excuses. And, again, worst completion percentage in the NFL outside of the pocket. His mechanics are horrible. I don't know if you bench him. He probably gives him the best chance to win right now. But as soon as you come out of playoff contention, you see what the rookie Nick Foles has. You understand? The rookies are coming into the NFL and they're playing early and they're having some success. See what the rookie can do.
What you have to say about that, Cali Mike? You got anything to say about that?
Yeah, like, you know, what Tech said towards the end, I agree with. Vic, he gives him the best chance to win right now, but Nick Foles, you know, he's a quality quarterback. You know, he came out of a good passing program in Arizona. He was a good quarterback while he was there. He's an NFL quarterback. The problem with Vic is he just, like I, you know, like Tech said, it's almost like once he got that contract, he kind of, you know, he kind of lost his hunger. You know what I mean? It's like he's not the same quarterback he was from that season when he first got there. You know, and it's almost like I said, I don't want to blame it on the contract. Maybe he just got complacent in his game and he didn't want to keep his game going. Like I say, he's not the same quarterback. You know, I don't know. Maybe if he's lost a step. You know, he's like I said, I don't know. I really can't see what it is. I mean, a lot of times, you know, Vic, at least he would have the athleticism to where he could leg out, you know, and break out the pocket even if his pocket was breaking down. But, you know, I don't know what's going on with him this year. I would say you would bench him just to get his head straight, you know. I mean, maybe he can come back and play, maybe he can't. But, you know, like I said, that team is not looking good. I don't think they're giving McCoy the carries they should be giving him. You know, it's a lot of problems with that team. But, you know, Vic's the quarterback, and the quarterback is the position everybody looks at, supposed to be the leader of the team. So, you know, he has to take it on the head. You know, bench him. If they don't win, you know, at least he learns, you know, that the team needs him. He needs to step it up. I mean, like I said, he's proven that he can play at a certain level. He did that when he came back, but he didn't expand on that. And, you know, and he's, like I said, he's not even showing the athleticism that he showed before. So, you know, like I said, I would say bench him, you know, and just at least, like I said, you ain't got any other options. You're about to get out of playoff contention, so.
Well, they're not going to bench him, man. They're definitely not going to bench him. I mean, talking about RG3, I mean, RG3 ain't throwing interceptions right now. You know, he has like a 60-something percent completion percentage, but he has 8 touchdowns with 3 interceptions.
My point is his O-line is struggling also, and he's getting it done. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, the Eagles have a better roster than the Redskins or the Colts.
Yeah, they do. They do. Huh? But I don't think they're going to bench him. I mean, they invested too much. They made their bed, so they got to sleep in it. So it's just going to be a year where I think they're just not going to make the playoffs, and they're going to have to make a coaching change, which essentially is kind of like they're going to start all over, I guess. So I
think they would bench him before they would make a coaching change, man. I mean,
well, the owner had made it very clear. The owner, remember what the owner said? He said 8-8 is not acceptable, and I don't think they're even getting there. So I think the coach is going to leave before Vic would, you know.
I think it should be that way. I mean, he's been there long enough. So Tex, you think Michael Vick should be benched, Tex?
I'd say if they come, whenever they come out of playoff contention, you need to see what the rookie has. I mean, I mean, would I bench him right now? I might.
I mean, he hasn't. He's only turned the ball over, I think, twice in the last five games. But the Eagles aren't scoring. Why are you not scoring with LeSean McCoy, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, Brent Celek? Why are you not scoring points?
Even before
Juan Castillo was let go, they were top half in the NFL on defense, and they were bottom fourth on offense. Okay.
Well, hold up. Let's see what the callers have to say here. Let me go 813 if I can. If this thing works.
Also, I just thought about that, James. Andy Reid might need to probably take more responsibility in the play calling then, since he's an offensive mind head coach.
All right, we got a caller here. 813, you there? 813. 813? Matt, you there?
Okay. They're all 813, I thought. All right.
No.
I'm benching him. For every reason that you guys noticed. His head clear, to get healthier. And I think they made a good point. They were going over the games on Monday, kind of showing what had happened before the Monday night game, what had happened in the NFL. He's gotten to the point where he's not comfortable in the pocket to throw the ball because he's getting hit so much. I mean, he's leaving the game and going to the domestic violence shelter he's living in right now and then coming back to the game because he's getting beaten so bad. You know, he's flinching before he throws. You know if your feet are not set and your shoulders are not square, you're not going to deliver a good ball. That's why he's throwing stuff into the dirt. I think half the passes that look like he's throwing away, I think he's actually trying to throw them to people. He's not comfortable there. He's gun shy. He needs to sit down, take some time, rest up, get his head straight. Is he a phenomenal athlete? Yes. Has his entire career been a question mark? Should Michael Vick be a starting quarterback? Yeah, of course. They've questioned his arm. They've questioned the hits. They've questioned decision-making his entire career. And you know what? Here we are. He's, what, 36 years old, and it's not changed at all. We're still questioning the same thing. Whereas this rookie, we watched him in the pro season, the preseason. He looked good. He looked solid. Put him in. Give him a shot. What's the worst thing that happens? He outplays Michael Vick, and then they start winning some games, and they give the team a chance to actually finish not dead last in the division. I mean, I don't like that. I predicted to finish second to last, and that's before I even see him play any games. Eagles shouldn't be there. And I'm not going to put it all on Michael Vick. The defense is playing atrocious, too. It's not the Eagles' defense. The Eagles are right up there with the Steelers, you know, with the 49ers, with these teams that have these remarkable defenses that teams fear week in and week out. Up there with the Ravens, you know, people did not want to play them. But it's not even the case anymore. I mean, to say that same flu, defensive flu, is also in Pittsburgh, but they're banged up and they're getting old. And the Eagles is I don't know. It's not their defensive coordinator. Whoever is calling the offensive plays, and I think a lot of it is Andy Reid. He's the biggest Michael Vick fan there is. He's putting too much of the game Vick's hands, and Vick's not going to give up. He's not going to punk out on any plays. He's going to play hard. He's going to try to make it happen. But he's at the point to where, like I said, he's gun shy. He turned 12 out of 17 turnovers on the team were from Vick. He's a liability.
And let me add something to that. Vick is also audibling into different plays that don't work. He's changing his plays. Is not working. And as far as the Eagles' defense, to compound on that, I mean, before they took Castillo, they were top half. The Eagles' problem on defense is they're not forcing turnovers. But the turnover ratio.
Audible. audibling, they're not changing a whole lot. You're looking to see if you're in man or if you're in zone. If it's a run play.
I'm just talking about what Vic is doing, though, what he's doing. He's checking into the wrong play. He's kind of trying to do his own thing. I mean, it's, you know, you look at it. You look at it. And you can hear it, too.
Those situations are practiced. He sees it. It may not even be as simply as the audibles, but what is the coaching staff telling him during the week? Hey, listen, you see this guy, you see it in film. They're coming up here, they're coming in with pressure. They know if they hit you, you're gonna be off your game. That's the whole thing. It's just like hack Shaq. Like they used to do with Shaq, put him on the free throw line. If you hit Michael Vick, he's gonna keep throwing and he's gonna start throwing the ball to you. We're putting it on the ground.
Let me see what the call. Let me go to the other caller here. He's been waiting for a while. Let me put you on hold here real quick. 850.
All right. Let me talk about two sides here in reference to the Eagles and Vic. The thing about Vic is that, I mean, he's been in the league long enough to know what his tendencies are and what he's going to do and what he's not going to do. The problem I see with the Philadelphia Eagles offense is that they have no type of playbook necessary to accommodate Vic, McCoy, and the receivers. My opinion, LeSean McCoy should be leading the league in yards from scrimmage, without a doubt. He should be leading the league in yards from scrimmage, whether it's running the ball, whether it's catching it off of flats, whether it's going for 5 yard outs or whatever. He should be leading the league in yards from scrimmage. And they don't have any plays that involve LeSean McCoy outside of running the ball, number one. Number two, they have a makeshift offensive line. They've been having, like, second and third stringers on tackle, playing guard, guards playing right tackle, whatever it is. So it's not like, you know, they have a set offensive line right now. And on the flip side, why did they shift their offensive line coach to defensive coach at the beginning of the season? I still don't understand why they did that.
Exactly.
I don't know either. I mean, maybe there was some sort of change in philosophy, disagreement in philosophy. I really don't know. Just something probably is going on behind the scenes. Maybe he's getting pressure from the owner or whatnot. I mean, it looks like this is going to be his last year, Andy Reid's last year. So he's trying to do what
he can to
salvage his job. And I don't see why. He's going to get another job somewhere, or maybe he takes a year off or whatnot, but somebody's going to hire him again. He has a pretty good resume, so, I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, he's been, like I said, he's been there long enough. He's been there since 1999. They haven't won the Super Bowl, so, I mean, sometimes, like, change is good. Time maybe need to change. I mean, hey, he came in with Donovan McNabb, and McNabb ain't there year or two without McNabb, so hey, I think it's about his time, you know.
But look here. Is it really his time? I mean, if you played under Andy Reid, you pretty much had success, right? But why doesn't it take with Michael Vick? And even with the guy that was coaching the defense that comes from coaching the offensive line, do you guys remember Philadelphia's defense down the stretch last year, last six, seven games? Monster. And even not so bad this year, but not forcing turnovers. I mean, and he would get the ball up so much, the turnover ratio is just totally out of whack. I mean, like, I agree that it's more than just Vic, but when I say Andy Reid won't be there, I'm saying for personal reasons. I'm not talking about football reasons.
That's true. No. He got about, you know, the loss of his son.
All
right.
There's been a lot of
I want to switch this topic here. We've been on this for a while. Let me put you on hold, James. I want to switch this topic to another division rival who may need a coaching change too, and Jason Garrett. Now, a lot of people are kind of in Cowboy Nation are like, you know, what's going on with this guy? He's not – we're not as good as we should be here in Dallas. So should there be a change in Dallas? right now? Let me start with you, Tex.
I think Jason Garrett, he's a Princeton guy. He's a smart guy. But the Cowboys are just horrible in situational football. I mean, you know, and that's just how you win. That's what a football game is. It's full of situations, and you have to manage. I mean, the game management is poor when they get in different situations. It's like they have no clue. And I mean, that's the coach. You know, that's the head coach. You have to have a handle on this. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, when on the drive before the drive when they ended up scoring the touchdown on fourth down, I mean, even when they're having success, you come out on first down, I look at them sometimes and I just don't understand why they get it. How they don't get it, and Garrett continues to say that they work on these things in practice, but you know nothing's coming of it in the game. And I think it's with the Cowboys, it's just a top down thing. I mean, you have to be right in your front office, your GM. You know, you got to trickle down. It's, you know, these homers on the radio claim Dallas's culture has changed, but I don't see a change. Still doing the same thing, same old.
I mean, well, are you trying to say something with Jerry Jones? That's what I'm trying to interpret what you're saying.
I think it's part Jerry and it's part people that he's surrounding himself with. People, you know, talking to him, you know, advising him, you know, just folks that contribute to it. I mean, Jerry ultimately makes a decision, but, you know, people get in Jerry's ear and Jerry listens to him. You know, like his old drinking buddy, Larry Lacewell, there was a scout down here. And I'll never forget when I heard on the radio one time they were talking about the draft where, you know, it was Steven Jackson, you know, Julius Jones was in that draft. He let Maurice Carthon talk him out of drafting Steven Jackson. Carthon told him, look, there's about five or six other running backs that are as good as Steven Jackson, and Julius Jones is one of them. And, I mean, it's stuff like that. That's why, you know, it's not entirely Jerry, but it's Jerry and the people that he's surrounding himself with. You know, not pure football guys that understand players, understand scouting. You know, it left when Jimmy left.
I agree with Tex on that, the Jimmy thing, the talent, the scouting part. I mean, like you said, Tex, Jimmy, I mean, he has a good eye of talent. It just seems like y'all haven't been the same in that area since Jimmy been gone. I can't wait to see, you know, life of football for Jimmy Johnson.
But, well, you know, one thing I noticed about the Cowboys in let me ask you guys to make sure you guys all have, if you're listening on your computer, make sure you have your speakers turned down, too, because we're getting a lot of feedback. The Cowboys, you know, like Tech said, the eye for talent hasn't been where it was. I'm surprised, you know, like I said, I think one of the reasons why they are where they are right now even is really out of a lot of luck. You know, they had a lot of guys come through, you know, who weren't expected to be big performers and have came through and performed big, you know, like guys like Miles Austin and, you know, and even Tony Romo, even though he's having a bad year this year. But, you know, some of the choices that they made and, you know, acquiring talent, free agent market, it really hasn't been all what it's been. You know, luckily they've had, you know, some luck in the draft, you know, by getting guys like DeMarcus Ware and, you know, maybe even a Dez Bryant, you know, his career is early. But, you know, it's like I said, it's not the same Cowboys team. It just doesn't feel like a Cowboys team. You know, like I said, you know, Cowboys is always been synonymous with certain things when it comes to football, and it's, you know, it just doesn't feel like a Cowboys team to me. Even though I'm not a fan, but they're one of the top franchises in football, if not the top. So you got to follow them. But you know, I don't know that much about the ins and outs, but it sounds like, you know, Tex has something going. You know, maybe this guy's letting a lot of, you know, people make decisions that don't need to be making decisions, and you know, and somebody else needs to come in and try to get the ship right.
Yeah, I agree.
Well,
I think Jerry Jones, you know what I'm saying, trying to be like Al Davis, you know, being control of everything. You know, Al Davis, you know, at his time was great at it before, you know, he started getting old and stuff like that. But I don't think Jerry Jones is Al Davis. And, you know, Jerry Jones, you know, being stubborn, you know, I don't think he's going to give that up, you know, if he wants to be control of everything.
All right, hold on. Let me get to the caller here. Let me get a caller here. 813.
Yeah, I don't think it's time for Jason Garrett to go. I think it's time for Romo to go. And I think it is probably more an issue with talent. And really, they've been more synonymous in the past. They've had good defenses, but the players that they picked up in the past weren't necessarily drafted. So that's what they did different. They got a bunch of draft picks and picked up defensive players that could play. And that's kind of worked out for them defensively. But then if you're drafting someone high in the first round on defense, unless you've traded to get two first-round picks, you got to wait till the next round. So I think their focus has been on defense because they've been losing games. But I don't think they've been losing games because of their defense. It's because, you know, Tony Romo is not a good game manager. He's turnover-prone. And Charles Woodson said the best, you know, if you just hang out, he'll throw the ball to you. So I think Tony Romo is really the problem. They need a different quarterback there. You know, they're not drafting the quarterbacks to beat him out because I think Jerry Jones likes him too much. That's probably the senile part that you were talking about Al Davis before. You know, I had always followed the Raiders, but he just got to the point where that man was stubborn, senile. He did things that didn't make any sense in any world but Al Davis land, and that's it. Michael Jackson looked at him and was like, hey, man, what the hell are you doing? You know. But Jerry Jones, he writes the paychecks. As long as he's still writing the paychecks, he's going to be doing whatever the hell he wants to do. But their biggest problem is quarterback. He's been to Pro Bowls, but I don't think he's even a Pro Bowl quarterback. He's came through and he has flashes. You know? Like I said, the broken clock is right twice a day. So, Tony Romo is the problem. And then they got a lot of injuries right now.
What do you think about Jason Garrett, though? I know Jerry Jones is a big fan of him. But I don't think Jerry Jones is going to fire Garrett.
I don't think he will either. I think it would probably be too soon to fire him. Wait, this is the second season?
Yeah,
I mean,
second full season as a head coach.
All right, well, hold on. We're gonna have to push it here a little bit. I got to put you on hold here. You got another caller in here. Let me go 850 first, though. Let me go first with 850.
All right, here we go. We got two things here. One on Jason Garrett and another thing about Tony Romo. First about Jason Garrett. The consensus here is that everybody's pretty much pointing to Jerry Jones as pretty much the one that's given the influence on the Dallas Cowboys team, and that's all the way true because if you really think about it, it's Jerry Jones putting a bunch of yes men around him trying to run the team. And it's been like that for the past 5 or 6 years or so. You didn't have that type of team when you had Jimmy Johnson or Barry Switzer or even Bill Parcells on the team because
you had somebody, at least that coach, that knew football, number one, and number two, knew how to draft players in order to make a good team out of it. Now, in reference to this team here, I really don't see much balance from him at all. Tony Romo is throwing interceptions because all they can do is pretty much throw the ball. You don't have a consistent running game back there in Dallas.
I mean, you can't have Felix Jones back there. He's not consistent. He's getting hurt. Yeah, their other guy getting hurt, and it's been like that for years and years and years. They're amongst the bottom consistently in rushing yards per game. So it's not like Tony Romo is to blame when you don't have anybody else to fall back on. That's like the thing with Carolina. They're talking about
you know, your boy Cam Newton out there, but the running backs ain't doing nothing out there either. And you got that, plus you got them playing as so-called, quote-unquote, America's team, but when you go to Dallas to play a game, it doesn't seem like they have a home court or a home field advantage compared to, like, Baltimore or Pittsburgh or Green Bay. No. It's like a show out there. So it's like, oh, I could be the Giants. I could go in there and play. So what? I ain't got to worry about noise and nothing like that. It's pretty much a party in that state right now.
All right, hold on. Let me put you. Got to put you on hold here, and let me go to the next caller here. Hold up. Let me go. Our favorite person in the world here.
What's up, fellas? I'm sorry I'm late. Had to take care of personal things. You know it is a holiday. But let's get right into it. What is up with everybody wanting to kiss the toes of Tony Romo? Tony Romo sucks. He is the worst quarterback in the NFL. Everybody wants to keep blaming the team, the running backs, the wide receivers, the coach, the owner. Tony Romo has been there for 6 years and ain't even made the playoffs but once. You got to stop blaming everybody else and point the finger where it belongs. Everybody
keeps looking
at him.
He's made the playoffs 3 times.
How far did he go? And every time they lost, why did they lose? Because Tony
Romo
screwed
up. You said once, so you got to know what you're talking about first.
The point is, Tony Romo sucks. And every time they've lost in the playoffs, they lost because of Tony Romo.
But that's kind of
a... Hold on. If whoever has your speakers on, please turn your speakers down because we're getting a lot of feedback.
It's simple.
Here. That's Wiley.
You can take your stats all you want. You can take your stats all you want and say he's a good statistical quarterback, this, that, the other. But stats are for professionals. We are the fans, and the fans want results. We are tired of seeing you go to the first round of the playoffs and screwing up and getting taken out. That's not what the Dallas Cowboys is supposed to be about. Now, I'm not a Dallas Cowboys fan, but I know that's how we feel. You don't go and keep screwing up and then expect us to keep forgiving you because your stats look good. Win or quit or get fired.
All right. Okay, so, Wiley, I'll put you on hold now. Hold on. I'm going to let him rebut, and then you can rebut back to Wiley, and then we're going to go to the next topic. What you got to say, Tex?
Hold on. Okay, let me say this. You can't just you know what you're talking about. First of all, okay.
Let him finish.
You know you can't just go. I mean, how do you? He just sucks. I mean, is it that
because
simple? I mean, Let me finish. That's how a simple fan sees things. Say okay, Romo is not a clutch player. You understand what I'm saying? Don't say he hasn't been productive because he has. I don't love Romo. I'm not a Romo apologist by any means. I think you have to have an elite quarterback to win, and he's not elite. But say, okay, he doesn't come up big in crunch time. Say that. He sucks. I don't get it. You know, Tim Tebow sucks.
He said he's the worst quarterback in the NFL.
In the NFL.
You name a new worst quarterback every week now. First it was Peyton Manning. He was the worst in the NFL. Then who was it last week? I think it was Michael Vick
last
week.
I don't like Peyton Manning, but Tony Romo is 10 times worse than Peyton Manning.
Really? If Peyton Manning's bad? Oh, you watch Peyton?
Like I said, I'm not all about the stats. I don't care if you went 9-11. If you lost, you suck.
So who don't suck then? Who doesn't?
Who don't suck? Tom Brady don't suck.
Aaron Rodgers don't suck. Super Bowl.
The people that
we're gonna stop here. We gotta go on to the next topic here.
Suck. You know why? Because they take their teams to the Super Bowl and they win. They don't suck.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Wiley. We're gonna put you on hold here. I'm about to put you on hold here. We're gonna have to go to the next topic, yo. Good combo. All right, we're going to change the subject here. We're going to go to our favorite quarterback in the league right now. He was rated as the most overrated player in the league, and that's Mr. Tim Tebow. And might I add, speaking of Tim Tebow, have anybody seen his new girlfriend?
Yeah, I've seen the picture.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Hold on.
Oh,
y'all
yeah,
been on TMZ? Man, stay off TMZ and MTO.
First of all, TMZ is legit. TMZ has never told a lie. You can't name one lie that TMZ has ever said.
Hey,
TMZ.
Why guys like us interested in TMZ? Why we got to answer? We interested in TMZ?
If they tell the truth. Okay, but
yeah,
nah, TMZ, they told a couple of lies.
Nah, looking at
TMZ
so,
never told a lie. You're lying there. You can't name one lie that TMZ has ever said.
Okay, even though it's off the subject. When
all
Michael
right.
Jackson first died, they reported that he died before he actually died.
Did they? You can't
yeah,
prove that. How do you prove that? How do you prove that?
It was all over the news, dude. It was all over the news. It was in the news.
Yeah, they did report that. They were the first ones to report that.
They reported it before he died. He was still alive.
How do you? But it was true. Whatever. I don't even want to get into that. All right. But anyway. Anyway, as a matter of fact, I think we need to have a segment about that, like players that have like the best looking women, but that's another conversation itself. Mark Sanchez is not looking good in terms of he's very, very inaccurate right now. Should they give Tim Tebow an opportunity? Should they trade Tim Tebow to Jacksonville? Jacksonville's interested now. Would he be a good fit in Jacksonville? I kind of got an idea what Texas is going to say, so let me go with Chi-Town first. What you think about that?
Yeah, he was talking about that today. I was hearing on one of the shows. They were saying I heard Peter King say that you know the way it's going, Sanchez is going to probably you know still be the guy. Of course, like Ryan said, that's his guy. But if things that say if the Jets is out of contention or things just don't get better, then he said he'll see Greg McElroy come in before. Before Tim Tebow will come in, if it would be a change.
So Tim Tebow's third on the depth chart pretty much right now.
Pretty much they were saying like McElroy would probably get in if it would be a change at quarterback over Tim Tebow. But I think, you know, Martin Sanchez, like I said, he gives the Jets the best chance to win. I mean, they're just showing a lot what they have right now. And then just – I don't think it's all Martin Sanchez either. You know, that game they had against the Patriots, he made some plays. They had a chance to win that game. That game should never have went in overtime. If the buddy of Stephen Hill would have made that grab on that pivotal drive, I could have been the game. They probably would have, you know, could have kicked the field goal or maybe got a touchdown and won that game. So I don't think it's all Sanchez. It's just, you know, had some injuries and some other stuff. It's other areas of the team that they're not that good, you know. And it is what it is about that team. But I don't think Tim Tebow would change anything. If you put him
all
in.
Right.
We all know that we said that. You know, we had a question again about him that he's not a starting NFL quarterback, and I'm standing by that. Tim Tebow is not a starting NFL quarterback. He can't throw the ball, and Mark Sanchez can throw it. So.
All right, Tex, give us your quick response. I think it's going to be quick what you're going to say. Tex, what you got to say?
You don't put Tebow in the game. You know, Sanchez is having his issues. I mean, he was especially – I think the game against Miami might have been worse than the one against the 49ers. Just making a whole bunch of bad decisions against the Dolphins. He's had his problems, but – you know, then you go the week before against New England, the Sanchez's, you know, the interception was bad that he threw to the end zone. He had his man underneath wide open, but his wide receivers have let him down. They can't run the ball. The Jets have nothing offensively. You give him some time, you know, he's the kind of type of quarterback that probably needs more weapons than, say, like a Brady or a Manning. But you're not – I don't think you're benching him for Tim Tebow. I mean, now you have to change the offense. You have to
I mean, you're limited. You understand what I'm saying? You're limited with Tim Tebow. And you're already limited right now with what you have at the skill positions and the troubles that you're having on the offensive line. So Tebow compounds these issues. You know, Sanchez is not a great quarterback, so you're not covering up inefficiencies anyway. You're certainly not going to do it with Tebow. You're just going to compound things. So I'm saying, nah, you don't start Tebow. I don't even, you know, the only reason why he's there is probably because of the owner and the attention, the circus. I'm not even as crazy as Rex Ryan is. I'm not even sure Rex Ryan wants him even there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Also, Cali Mike, also, what you got to say?
Before Cali Mike speak, I was also add that Santonio Holmes, even though he's a nice receiver, Santonio Holmes is not a one receiver, though. I remember me and Tex had a discussion about that.
Well, like I said, when Tebow even come in there as a starter in the first place, they didn't come in there with having him legitimately in mind to ever take over the quarterback. The Jets are not a good team on offense, man. They, you know, like I said, the most blown up stat that everybody kept telling people was that they were leading, they were leading the league in rushing. And I kept telling people, it's like, with who? It's like that's a very misleading stat, you know, when your team leads the league in rushing. You know, it's very misleading. And in Texas, you remember I was arguing about this, about how they're not good. I kept telling y'all. They're not good. And now they're finally showing they're getting exposed. It's not good. I never seen who was, like I said, the British 32 was never good to me. I don't know how he made the Pro Bowl. None of these cats were ever good to me. And it's like, you know, and it's like they were almost getting by on, I don't know what they were getting by on, but like I said, I knew that was going to fall apart. I called that at the beginning of this season. You know, me and Tex had a long argument about Mark Sanchez before the season even started. You know, and I told him, I said, he can throw. He's not an elite quarterback. We all know that. But, you know, he can throw if you put him in the right position. But this team, you know, like I said, they don't run the ball. Sean Green is horrible. You know, the offensive line is horrible. Their defense is injured and horrible. No wide receivers. I mean, yeah, put Tebow in. Complete the clown show, you know. The show must go on. You know, put him in. Go right ahead. Let's all right. You know, put me in, too. I want to play.
All right. Let me go to a call here. We're running out of time here. I got to get to a call. What you got to say, Shottown, real quick before I get to the call?
I don't think Sean Green's a feature back. I think he's a good complimentary back, but I think they do need another running back.
All right. Clearly. Matt, 813, you're on.
Hey, that's a good point. Let me start here. I never thought Sanchez was the guy they should have drafted. They picked the wrong quarterback. They were a year late on picking quarterbacks. That's really what it was. He fell into the position. He got drafted too high. He isn't what they thought he was going to be. And then on top of that, they don't have, again, running backs that are number one running backs. Sean Green, they thought he was going to be. He's been hurt, unproductive. McKnight, evidently they think he's a better either return man or corner than a running back.
Exactly.
You know, and then I don't even know who the other back is. Tebow, I guess. I guess he's their back. They really don't have any running back. And then Holmes, we could have an argument about Holmes, how good he is, 1-2-10. He's out for the season. He's on IR. He's not even relevant. He's not going to play. Unless he's going to be coaching someone up, like, I don't know, Stephen Hill, to catch the ball. That's part of Sanchez's problem, his receivers. They keep dropping passes. Why don't you pull up the statistic on drop passes for receivers in New York? Well, let's face it, they probably would have won a game or two more if they would catch the ball. But they're not progressing the ball downfield because the receivers aren't catching him. So it's not all on Sanchez. Do they stink? Yes. And I pronounced him dead, what was it, the second game into the season, and then Revis went down. They're done. They're not going anywhere. They're not going to be anything of relevance. Now, if they want to have dignity and they want to continue and focus on quarterbacks, you look at your third, the kid from Alabama. That's where you go for quarterback. If you just want to say, hey, listen, I want to sell more tickets, I want to get more TV money, I want to sell more jerseys, and I'm going to bang on revenue, you put in Tebow. Because he sells. People either love or hate Tebow. And you always bank on polarization. That sells. Why do we love to hear Tony Watley say anything? It doesn't have to make sense. It's because he's polarized. You either love Tony or you hate Tony. And that's why we welcome him every week in any show, whatever we do, because Tony's going to say something that we probably don't understand and do not agree with. It doesn't matter because Tony's there to say it. It's the polarization. It's that polarizing factor.
Yeah.
If you want money, put in Tebow. You're going to salvage your season that way, you know, by making money, make a business decision out of it. But, again, I don't really see the defense doing too much to help out. They don't have receivers. They have a mediocre quarterback to begin with for the last few years. And no running game. Jones was their running back, and they traded him off to Kansas City. And
yeah, I don't understand that.
I didn't understand that either. Because
they thought Sean Lee was good. Hold on, I gotta put you on hold here real quick. We got a bunch of calls here. Let me put you on hold real quick. Let me go 850.
Hey, first off, I ain't know that 26 out of 32 NFL starting quarterbacks suck. But on this note about the New York Jets and Sanchez, I mean, it's like said before with the lineup that they have. I mean, they already were set up for failure anyway at the beginning of the season. It wasn't like they had the receivers, the running back to complement what, you know, Sanchez did in the past. I mean, Sanchez had a great running game, you know, a couple of years ago. Now it's non-existent. And it said, like was said before, the defense is pretty much hurting shot. So why not give Tim Tebow a chance at it? I mean, what else can they do? I mean, it's not much that's left for the New York Jets at this point. I mean, they're 3-5. I mean, if they're going to try to make the playoffs, might as well try and make a change now.
I would start Tim Tebow right now. Like you said, he's got a new famous girlfriend. I would have him and Mark Sanchez not only compete for the starting quarterback, but compete for that girl as well. Because
hey,
Mark Sanchez
is too.
So, you know, I don't know if he was the finest chick.
We need to have a segment, man, at some point in the future about players and who got the finest women, because Mark Sanchez had Eva Longoria.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Yeah, Kate Upton, too.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he messed it up because he was so frustrated with the season. But, hey. Anyway, let me go to the next call here. Hold up. Let me put you on hold. And let me go to 813-409.
It's this simple for me. I am result-oriented. I have no love for nobody if you ain't getting me wins. I don't care what your name is. I don't care what everybody thinks about you. If I'm getting L's instead of W's, you suck. It's that simple. For me, I would much rather have somebody that is winning games than to have somebody that is losing games. Why? Because I'd rather have a championship than an MVP. Why?
So would everybody else.
Super Bowl matter more than MVP. Wait. Everybody else got to talk. Let me finish. Tebow, every time he comes into the game, he gets a first down. Every time he comes into the game, they get excited. I don't like Tebow. I really think Tebow sucks just like everybody else. But the thing is, every time he comes in, he makes results. If Sanchez wants to be throwing crazy passes and making them lose, put Tebow in and get some results. I'd rather have W's than L's, and I don't care who gets them.
And like I said, hold on, I got something to say on top of that. After you, Callie, Mike, I got something to say. Follow that.
Okay, Tony said that he said that Peyton Manning sucks, but I believe isn't Peyton Manning the winningest quarterback of all time? Don't he have the most wins?
I would pick Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger over Peyton Manning every day. Every day.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't put no Ben Roethlisberger over there.
Why? Because they are getting championships. I want to battle.
But it's a team. It's a team game, Tony Wiley. It's a team game. This is my thing.
Okay, and his team ain't winning championships.
Big Ben got two, though.
I'd rather have Eli Manning than Peyton Manning. Why? Because they get me the medal. They get me the championships.
I got something to say about it.
You'd have Ben Roethlisberger over Steve Young?
Steve Young got him two championships. Steve Young don't play no more. We don't even have to talk about him.
But you said W's, right?
We're talking about people that are playing right now. We ain't talking about your grandkids.
Okay, I got a question in. Based on your theory, Wiley, who would you rather take, Trent Dilfer or Dan Marino?
Listen to me. You're asking me, would I rather prefer the teams that Trent Dilfer was on that he got his championship with or the team that Dan Marino was on? I would take Trent Dilfer every time. Why? Because they got their championship. I don't care about how good somebody's stats are.
Wiley,
got him a championship, and that's all that matters.
Hey, Wiley, I'm going to put you on hold.
Dan Marino ain't got no rings on his finger.
Hey, Wiley, I'm going to put you on hold here. We know that. Hold on, I'm going to put you on hold, though, real quick. I'm putting you on hold. To follow up on what Wiley said, I want Tebow to play. And like I said 2 weeks ago, the three fundamental things that you have to have to be a quarterback in this league, to successful that is, you have to be able to make all the throws. Can Tim Tebow make all the throws? No. maybe. Is he accurate? No. He's not. But when the game's on the line, can he deliver? And that's a yes. You got to admit to that. That's a yes. Yes. He did it last year. He did it last year in Denver, Mike.
There's a reason Denver got rid of him. If he was doing this,
Denver was glossing. Like, there's a reason that Denver got rid of him. That's right, because they were too focused on the other two deficiencies that he had. That's right. That's why Denver got rid of him, because he's not accurate, and he probably can't make all the throws. But the issue is that why he's still relevant is when they. We can play. He plays quarterback because when the game's on the line, he delivers. That's why he's still playing. If he didn't have that attribute about himself,
Derrick McFadden can run the Wildcat when the game is on the line and score a touchdown. Ronnie Brown was scoring touchdowns from Miami at quarterback. That doesn't mean he's a quarterback.
Yeah, I'm just saying he makes plays. He will make plays. You got to admit that. Hold on, let me go to a call here, and we're gonna round it. We're gonna wind it down here. 813. Matt, you there? 813, you still there?
I exploded from the foolishness of Tim Tebow being a starting quarterback.
All right. Okay.
I had it on mute.
Okay.
I don't know what happened with Tim Tebow. He should be the throwing guy because that's what he was in high school. He set Florida State records passing, you know? But I think Florida, Urban Meyer kind of screwed him up. They tainted him. Turned him into a runner first. Now, if he takes more time to work on his mechanics, can a few years down, let's face it, what, he's 3 years in the league? How long was Aaron Rodgers in the league before he got in the game and played? 5 years. He sat behind Favre for 5 years. Okay,
But dude, I don't know. I don't see any
Tim Tebow
potential.
Stinks. Florida stinks. The only reason he did all that is because he played in an overrated SEC conference.
Whatever, man. That's ridiculous.
Well,
but
he
right,
was
whatever.
He was a productive quarterback and a winning quarterback because he was in what you guys have said is the best division in college football.
Oh, I defended that. I said they stink. I said they're overrated.
Mike don't like the SEC.
I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, man. All right. Yeah, 7 straight national championships. Okay.
Yeah, with Tim Tebow, who you guys have transformed into the greatest quarterback in the history of college football.
Oh, I never said that. Now, that's now. Whoever came up with that is ridiculous. I never said that.
It's not even a matter of you said. He is. Who's more than Tim Tebow?
Tommy Frazier. I'll take Tommy Frazier.
I take Charlie Ward before Tim Tebow.
I said produce more overall. Nobody has produced more overall than Tim Tebow.
Tommy Frazier did.
Yeah, he did.
Tommy Frazier never won a Heisman, so no, he didn't produce more than Tim Tebow.
No, he didn't, but he won two national championships. Tim Tebow
did not win two.
No, he did not. Chris Leak won the first national championship.
Tim Tebow
did not win two national championships. And there's a reason why they say he won.
It is the greatest quarterback ever. And you guys
no, he's not. He's not the greatest quarterback ever in the SEC. That's ridiculous. Anyway.
Gosh. Can we mute him?
Who's a better quarterback in the SEC than Tim Tebow?
You got about Peyton Manning and Eli Manning.
No. So, come on now. We're talking about college, Mike. Let's be serious. Neither one of them even won SEC championships.
I can't think right now.
Yeah, about that 97 national championship game Peyton Manning played in. They fared well in that game. It was a 48-17.
Peyton Manning played in the national championship game?
No,
well,
it was
they
T. Martin.
Nebraska, and they shared – Nebraska blew them out and shared the national title with Michigan that year. Which, the only real relevant Michigan team that Michigan's had, you know –
They were never played any national championship in the last couple of years,
but not really so much. And I really don't even think the SEC has been the greatest division in college football over so many years, as so many people claimed. You know, what is the greatest? What makes it the greatest? Just because
the defensive line. We're gonna all be online now here, so let's all talk one at a time. I'm putting out my favorite person on the phone now. All right, Wiley, here you go.
All right, you want to know who the best
everybody's online now,
including
you, Matt.
Yeah, you want to know who the best quarterback in SEC history is? The man that is the Carolina Panthers quarterback right now. Because had he had the same 4 years that your boy Tebow had, he'd have had him 3 national championships.
You mean, are you talking about the quarterback that started behind Tim Tebow in Florida?
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't.
I'm talking about him. He may have started behind him, but he's better than him. I will tell you that straight up.
He is?
He is better than Tim Tebow.
Based on what?
And he was better than Tim Tebow in the SEC.
Based on what?
His arm?
Based on production.
Based on his arm and his legs.
Hold on.
Cali Mike. So you would say the – who would you say, the college Tim Tebow – or the college Cam Newton, who would you take?
In 3 seasons, Tim Tebow threw what? A total of 10 interceptions in the SEC? Total?
So you take the college Tim Tebow, basically?
It's not even a contest.
They both won a national championship undefeated, led their teams. What's the difference?
Tim Tebow.
Matter of fact, Cam Newton, the year he won his Heisman, he had more touchdowns than Tim Tebow.
Tim.
I guess that's a fair
Hey. We got to wind down here. So,
Mike, I'm surprised you're taking Tebow over Cam because you was even saying, why is this guy, Tebow, was starting over Cam at Florida?
Well, let's take Tebow's sophomore year and Cam Newton's senior year. Let's compare the 2 years. Who was the better quarterback?
Let's compare the production.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Far.
Overall production.
Yes. Tim Tebow, by far,
over one
was
year,
over
no one
most
year,
productive quarterback in college football history.
3 years.
All right, we got 60 seconds left. Well, we can go over maybe a minute.
I can tell you.
I mean,
I would take Cam over Tebow every time, in every situation.
Has anybody seen Tim Tebow's girlfriend?
No.
No.
I'm Googling it.
Please Google it.
You're going to have to post that on your Facebook, my brother.
Is this guy really celibate? Is this guy really a celibate guy?
Of course not. Come on now. Really?
Hey, I don't care. That's this man's personal thing, you know.
When he opens his mouth, he talks.
He might
listen
be gay.
He's celibate.
Seriously.
I can't believe that. I just can't believe it.
I think he's gay.
I think he's just selling an image.
You guys are talking about the greatest quarterback.
I think he does more photo shoots with the shirt off than any grown man should.
But
okay,
I still think Cam is the best. I think Cam Newton is the best quarterback to ever come out of the SEC. I think he is a Hall of Fame quarterback in the NFL Hall of Fame.
I think he's going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks in history.
I don't know about that. Cam Newton's going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks in history.
You think he's going to be better than RG3?
Cam Newton is amazing. That boy is bad.
Even though the other guy sucks.
I'm keeping it real. When the juice boils down the gravy, at the end of his career, Cam Newton will be one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. He is that good.
Tell him next year to run that ad instead we're going to the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, you know, he's got a bad team around him right now. That don't make him a bad quarterback.
Is it any different than the team he had last year?
No. Yes, it's a lot different because they've had injuries. His offensive line is horrible. When I say horrible, his offensive line is horrible.
Tony, everybody is having O-line issues, and Carolina had one of the best O-lines in the league last year.
Okay, but this ain't last year.
Kyle Nix is out for the season, by the way. So.
Tim Tebow is the greatest quarterback in history.
A lot of people are having O-line issues.
Hey, CMT Firestorm, next week. Peace.
The quarterback, like Johnny Lou Jack or even Sid Luffin, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the galloping ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. He had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Why ain't Tittle, Allie Madison? Hey, I remember all those guys from back in the day. It's the sport